Hello and welcome again to the Associate Cricket Podcast, first of this year in 2018. We've got the Under-19 World Cup to talk about, and we'll be doing a preview of World Cricket League Division 2. As you join me for both of those is Andrew Nixon. Hi, Andrew.
Hi, Russ. Hi, everybody.
Andrew, the Under-19 World Cup was won a couple of days ago by India, as we're recording. Had four associates in this year because Ireland and Afghanistan are no longer in the associates. I think last year, had they still been associates, we'd have talked about how amazing Afghanistan were in getting to the semi-final. But with just the four that were there, the performances in this World Cup by associates were probably as bad as they've ever been in an Under-19 World Cup, and pretty dire overall.
This was the first sort of modern-day Under-19 World Cup where an associate didn't beat a full member. Canada won a couple of games but against other associates, and Canada finished 12th. There's really absolutely nothing to write home about. Your Namibia, who did so well in the last Under-19 World Cup, they finished 7th in that tournament, were absolutely dire in this one. Obviously, it's a different group of players, but you see this a lot with associate cricket. They get a sort of a bubble in their youth team of some very good players, and then they get older, and the next batch isn't as good, and it's a unfortunate thing that happens with. It's always going to happen probably with associate cricket, where the development funding has to be prioritised in certain ways. And obviously, a few years ago, Namibia were able to concentrate on their Under-19 side, and at the moment, they've not been able to, and hence, it's probably not as good.
Yeah, and I mean, look, you can have two good players, and that can be enough to turn an Under-19 side from not qualifying to challenging some full members, given the depth in Under-19 cricket. I mean, the depth in associate cricket is sometimes pretty ordinary. So that's going to happen. It does raise an interesting problem about how the ICC has gone about qualifying for these Under-19 World Cups, in the sense that they had talked about having teams qualify if they'd done well in the previous one. That's the performance in this sport in Under-19 World Cup will indicate that that's a really bad idea at age group cricket, as we've said before.
They've actually decided to do that for the next one. It's the top 11 full members from this qualify automatically for the next one, so which means Ireland will have to stay in regional qualifiers for another year. I would just much rather they had maybe pick a random number of teams qualify automatically, maybe the semi-finalists and the host and everybody else qualify through regional qualifiers. I wouldn't move away from a 16-team World Cup. It's a nice sort of round number to have in a World Cup. Maybe you could expand to 20 teams and have that would probably lead to more associate wins against other associates, but if not necessarily against full members. But it's, and whether it's worth having the Under-19 World Cup every 2 years, I think that's probably something to question, because you just end up with constantly just preparing for Under-19 World Cups, and whether you could have a 4 year period to develop an Under-15 team into an Under-19 team, whether that would actually be more beneficial to the players.
Yeah, I think it was 4 years. You'd probably want to look at Under-21s rather than Under-19s, just so that you've got, so you're talking about young players rather than the gap between a 15-year-old and a 19-year-old means that people are going to miss out, because you wouldn't pick 15 and 16-year-olds generally into an Under-19 team just because they're much younger. Whereas an Under-21 team, that would make sense. It would be better quality. I would note on what you said about the qualification, you could go to regional qualifiers and have a smaller Under-19 World Cup, which I think would probably work better as well, just a 12-team tournament where the associates get their opportunities at a regional level.
Yeah, that's another possibility. It'd be interesting to see as well. Would the full members actually qualify from a regional event with associates involved? There's no associate wins and over four members in this tournament. We have seen some unlikely associate wins. Obviously, people will remember Nepal's sort of occasional runs to the Super 8 stage in the past, the quarterfinals, and teams like Malaysia have picked up wins over four members in Under-19 World Cups in the past. So it would just be interesting to see how that would go with four members actually taking part in those regional events.
Moving on, there was another small tournament that's worth mentioning. The Northwest African Women T20 tournament was played. This involved Ghana, who are hosting Sierra Leone, Nigeria, and Gambia. It was looked like a pretty closely fought tournament from the scores. Sierra Leone, Ghana, and Nigeria all finished on 2 wins, and unfortunately Gambia was a bit further behind.
Nobody really got thrashed in this tournament. But yeah, it's as we I think we always say with these tournaments, it's nice to see that these tournaments are still happening outside of the official ICC events, and I think some of these teams perhaps don't get the opportunity to play in those ICC events. So it's good to see them get some cricket.
Yeah, especially the women's level is such a small amount of cricket, particularly in Africa. So this might be just about the only tournament they play in the whole year or 2 years.
I think just after that Northwest Africa tournament as well, it was a 6-match series between Uganda and Tanzania as well, which Uganda won all 6 matches, or 6 T20 matches. And these teams are getting some cricket, which can only help their development.
Yeah, and good for Uganda, because obviously they've got the World Cup, World 2020 qualifiers later this year, so that they've continued the form that they showed in breaching that tournament in the first place.
And as we say, good that they're actually getting some cricket, because we sometimes see that between these two tours, they play the regional qualifier, they have almost a year off before the global qualifier, and they're completely out of form and out of the routine of playing international cricket. So good that they're actually continuing to play and playing as a group together.
Moving on to news, Andrew, the World T20 in 2020, that's going to be a nightmare for everyone involved. Well, interestingly, have 12 teams in its what they're calling the Super 12, as opposed to 10 in the previous tournaments, which means that 4 teams will qualify out of the first round or the final qualifier, depending on what you want to call it, of those 8 teams, which would be good for some more associates to get involved in that part of the tournament.
Yeah, it certainly will. 12 happens to be the number of full members at the moment as well, which I'm sure is just a coincidence. We're told as well that the top 10 teams in the rankings will qualify automatically. Whether that's the top 10 full members or the top 10 any member, I think will remain to be seen. We've gone over what we think of this World 2020 format before. It's not good. Nobody actually believes that it's that first round is part of the tournament. Everybody considers it to be another qualifier. And then you've got this Super 12 with 2 groups of 6. The World 2020 is probably the ideal tournament to run sort of like a tournament involving full members that you could run like as an associate tournament. You'll run it over a couple of weeks on three or four venues in close proximity to each other, and instead it's become an almost month-long monster. The ICC sort of have this knack of taking things that should be short and stretch them out, as far as they can, and it's unfortunate. It's stopping what should be an exciting tournament and making it last way too long.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the beauty of the World 2020 when it first started was that it was very short. It was probably a bit too short when it was 4 groups of 3, but now it's a behemoth. It's adding 10 games essentially, but it's a pre-qualifier and at first with 12 games and then a massive pile of games, 30 games in the group stage before you get to semi. So it's becoming a very, very large tournament. Assuming they're going directly to semis and not quarterfinals as the 12-team World Cup was doing, which add another 4 on top of that as well.
Yeah, I mean it's pretty much as long as the 50-over World Cup now. In fact, I think it might even be slightly longer. It's not good, and just do 4 groups of 4. Nobody's gonna. I think that's what everybody expects a 16-team tournament to be, and they just don't seem to be able to get to grips with it. They want to protect those 4 members. There was talk as well that you'd have 4 members playing in regional qualifiers for the next World 2020, and none of that seems to have come to pass, which is a real shame. There was a real chance to have a proper qualifying process for this tournament, and the ICC seems to have ditched it.
Yeah, although it's notable here that it looks like it'll be sub-regional qualifiers for the next World T20. So that at least is probably a step forward, in at least in terms of logistics, for some of those particularly large regions like Asia, to get more teams involved as well.
We saw that. We saw Asia do that with their youth tournaments last year. They do Asia and the Americas certainly are doing this for the World 2020 qualifiers. I don't know about Europe and Africa and East Asia Pacific is probably too small a region to be able to do it. But yeah, it's as we've said a lot on this podcast, that's probably the way you want to go, just to keep your costs down and make the logistics of organising these tournaments a lot easier.
In other news, the ICC had a delegation to Nepal to discuss the constitution. Can had put forward a constitution in the spirit of USACA, which didn't meet with the ICC requirements, and so now they're attempting to get it rectified in order to move forward. Hopefully this will be resolved in time for Nepal to come back into the ICC and remove the suspension by June.
Yeah, hopefully. I mean, you'd think Nepal would have learned from the lesson of the USA. You're just use the constitution that the ICC want you to use, and don't try anything else. You know, don't try any funny business. But you know, your people don't learn from other people's mistakes, do they? And yeah, very very silly there from Nepal, I think. And hopefully they can make some. You know, the recent ICC press release said that something around encouraging progress has been made, and hopefully that will continue.
Still in Asia, the Hong Kong T20 Blitz will be on again. They've announced that there'll be 27 overseas players in the tournament this year, which is, I think, an increase on last year. Some older names, some well-known names like Sangakkara, but also some very good, very young names as well, like Jofra Archer will be involved. So that, again, looks like it's going to be a pretty interesting short and interesting tournament.
Yeah, it always is. I think it's on proper TV this time, not just web-streamed as well. I think it'll be on BT Sport over in the UK, I know that. I don't know about anywhere else, but you're a really professionally run tournament. It's just getting bigger and better, and it's a nice little short tournament as well. They sort of squeeze it, I think, in between the Big Bash League and the Pakistan Super League, which sort of helps players be available for it that you perhaps otherwise wouldn't see playing in a tournament in an associate country.
And if that's an example of how a well-run tournament in an associate country, the Ajman All-Stars is perhaps one that people should learn from and how not to do it. It wasn't endorsed, as far as I'm aware, but so the players shouldn't, at least the ICC-affiliated players shouldn't have been playing within it, but it looks like it's been rife with match-fixing, judging by some of the footage in the ICC's investigation. And it shows that, you know, associate cricket, if it's being televised, is pretty vulnerable to that kind of thing.
The video is quite comical. It's less convincing than a professional wrestling match. It's quite obviously something not entirely above board is going on there. I think the ICC have said they can't actually investigate it because it wasn't sanctioned by the Emirates Cricket Board or the regional board in the UAE. Salman Butt was involved, who obviously has form when it comes to match fixing. I'm not saying he was definitely involved in this, but it's not a good look for him to be involved in this tournament. It's unfortunately probably going to happen more often. Associate cricket is particularly vulnerable where you have players not being paid as much as they are when they play for full members. And especially in these little tournaments that crop up, you see these sort of tournaments in the UAE a lot. You see them in the USA occasionally as well. These sort of private T20 leagues, T20 tournaments. Jamie Harrison once referred to them as pirate cricket, and which is quite an apt description of this tournament, perhaps.
And finally, Andrew, it's quite a short episode this month, but there wasn't a huge amount of actual cricket played. But the World Cricket League Division 2 will be played in the next couple of weeks, and then it'll be followed by the World Cup qualifiers. So there's a lot to look forward to in the first couple of months of this year. World Cricket Division 2 is looking like it's going to be particularly interesting. The six teams involved, Kenya, Namibia, UAE, Nepal, Canada, and Oman. To me, Kenya, based purely on their World Cricket League Championship form, is probably going to be the favourites.
Yeah, although, I mean, in general, there's not too much to choose from between all six of these teams. They're all quite evenly matched teams. As you say, Kenny only just missed out on getting to the World Cup qualifier. And obviously they're playing in Namibia, where they're relatively familiar with the conditions, so I think you'd put them as one of the favourites. Namibia usually at home, you'd have them doing well as well, but you know, they've had a pretty shocking run of form in recent months, and they have Christy Vilhoun back for this tournament, which is always good. But and one player can sometimes make a difference in this sort of event. But yeah, Namibia. Perhaps not. Canada could well get a back-to-back promotion. Oman as well are certainly capable. UAE, also UAE fighting to retain their ODI status. They'll need to get promoted to keep that. And you're in Nepal. You can never really rule out Nepal, although they are, you're playing away from Asia, where they often struggle. I'm quite looking forward to this tournament. It's probably the closest World Cricket League tournament in some time.
Yeah, it's very, as you say, very difficult to pick between them in terms of who'll do well. UAE have impressed recently. I think they finished the World Cricket League Championship much stronger than they started it, where it looked like they were really doing poorly. And they've obviously playing in the UAE in the last few weeks. They've had some good results as well. So they're definitely a team that would fancy themselves to go through. I don't think I should write off Oman, because just purely on the basis of the fact that they've hit every hurdle and gone over every hurdle they've come before them in the last year and a half, and it's maybe they might spring a surprise.
Yeah, that's always Oman definitely a possibility. As I say, breeze through the World Cricket League, they're like sort of Afghanistan were. A decade ago, where they started in Division 5 and made it all the way to the World Cup qualifier, and Oman have a chance of doing that as well. Perhaps they can even do in Afghanistan and push towards ODI status as well. And so, very sort of interesting to see how they're doing this. Can they get another promotion?
Can I draw on you for a prediction, Andrew? Both up and down.
I'm gonna go Kenya and the UAE to go up, and to go down, I'm gonna go for going to get the relegation is a lot more difficult. I'm gonna go Canada and Namibia.
I incline to agree with you, as you probably guessed, in who will go up. Canada is a very interesting team in this, and I'm not sure how good they'll be. I feel that their administrative troubles might hurt them, although the players that they've got playing there, Nikhil Duda and Nitish Kumar, very handy and more than capable of tilting the games in their favour. But I feel like Canada and Nepal will go down. Apologies to all Nepal fans for picking that, but just outside Asia, I'm not sure I trust them.
Yeah, that's fair enough. You're a brave man picking Nepal to go down.
One more note on that, though, and that's that the draw could be interesting, because Kenya's beginning the tournament with UAE and Namibia, which will make a huge difference to how they perform. And they're ending the tournament with Oman, while Canada's playing Nepal. So those permutations mean that as we get into those final matches, we could see a face-off for relegation in one match, potentially, and a face-off for promotion in another.
Yeah, the ICC always seem to manage to pick the fixtures to maximise the chance of that. It's probably one of the few things they actually do well.
On a slightly different note, you mentioned status, Andrew, and not only the UAE has ODI status in this tournament, so we won't have the issue of what some matches being ODIs and some not here, but we are going to see it, unfortunately, in the World Cup qualifier, where much like the previous one, where some of the second round playoff matches might end up having one day international status, and potentially even the final could not, depending on how it falls out.
Yeah, so basically the ITCs have made the decision that they're going to cut the number of associates with ODI status to 4. It was previously 6, and they've essentially, the reason they've given for that is because, well, you can't have more than 16 teams with ODI status. That's literally the reason. Which is nonsense. They have more than 16 with T20I status, for example. Netherlands, who of course qualified for the ODI League by winning the World Cricket League Championship back in December, have ODI status after the conclusion of this tournament. So their matches in this tournament won't be in ODI, when if they were played, you know, a week later, they would be. If UAE get promoted from World Cricket League Division 2, they will have ODI status for this tournament. If they don't, then there'll be one less team with ODI status in the tournament. And after the tournament, the top three associates plus the Netherlands will get ODI status. The result of that is that if four associates happen to finish ahead of the full members or the Netherlands, which is, you know, not out of the question, that fourth associate will get ODI status. So you could end up with a situation where ninth and seventh place playoffs have ODI status, and some of the second round matches, the Super Six matches, and even, as you say, the final don't have ODI status. This is a completely crazy way of doing things. The ICC could have just said, okay, we're going to make the entire tournament an ODI tournament, even though these teams don't have permanent ODI status, which is what they did for your World Cups and Champions Trophies prior to 2006.
We've had many discussions about status, and I can understand why you might not want to give every international status. But it seems very strange to me why you wouldn't, as you say, just do it by tournament basis. It would make much more sense to just say the World Cup qualifiers are on one day internationals, and then say, well, do we want the World Cricket League Division 2 to be one day internationals or not? And then that's the determining point of whether it is or not. And the World Cricket League Championship should be entirely one day internationals. Whereas obviously this past edition that just went through, some of the matches were and some of the matches weren't, depending on who was playing, which again, it doesn't make any sense. It makes the statistics even harder to read because you can't find matches in under ODI statistics because some of the matches aren't there. It's very frustrating, and it makes a lot more sense just to say, well, if you're at this level, you get it, and every tournament played at that level gets it, rather than assigning it to a particular nation.
Yeah, and this is going to be probably the highest profile World Cup qualifier ever, due to the presence of your full members, and in particular the West Indies. Anybody who's actually trying to follow this tournament, you know, West Indies, let's say your West Indies player scores 200 against the Netherlands, it's not an ODI 200, but if they score against Papua New Guinea, it is. And trying to actually explain that to someone who's watching at home, a casual follower of cricket, is going to be impossible. Because it is impossible to explain why that's the case. It's completely crazy.
And there's no justification on statistical records perspective, which is the main reason put forth for status anyway, because in this, as already has been established, the Netherlands are a better team than Papua New Guinea. And if they're playing in this same tournament at this same level, then they are, by definition, at the same level. It doesn't make sense to distinguish them in this situation.
No, it certainly doesn't, and it's a completely ridiculous decision to do that, and you know, it's not too late for them to change their mind, and but they probably won't.
And on that's it. Thanks, Andrew.
Thanks, Russ, as always.